Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 208 event, which takes place in Brooklyn, New York. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we had zero premium bets for UFC Fight Night 104, so nothing really to say there. Now back to the present, UFC 208 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now kicking off the fight card on Fight Pass is a featherweight contest between Rick Glenn, who is 18-4-1, and Felipe Nover, who is 12-7-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Glenn, minus 210, the comeback on Nover, plus 160. And that's at our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu, so make sure you check those guys out. Right now over at Five Dimes, it's currently Glenn minus 200. The comeback on Nover is at plus 170. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Nothing much going on as far as action. It hasn't got really pounded one way or the other. I think there is going to continue to be some two-way action on this fight a little bit, and the line seems to be appropriately set. Glenn, of course, dropping back down after his debut loss at lightweight to a very tough matchup for him stylistically and Evan Dunham. But give Glenn credit, he's dropping back down to featherweight for this fight, which that's obviously a much better division for him. And he does present a lot of problems to a lot of guys, just the way his style is. I mean, he's a tough, aggressive fighter, pushes a high pace. He can beat you on the feet. He's got some takedown ability, likes to ground and pound on the ground as well, has a little bit of a sub game to go along with it. And he continues to improve fight by fight. And right now, I think he's in his absolute prime. He's 27 years old. He's got confidence behind him. Again, I know he has a setback in his UFC debut, but I think he realized that featherweight, he's doing a lot of good things recently, and I think he's going to continue that role here against Nover. Nover's a tough out. He's not an easy guy to make your second fight with. I mean, Nover's been, honestly, throughout his whole career, a little bit underestimated and, again, really not getting enough credit for his overall game, because Nover's a very tough out, meaning he's got a complete skill set. He's decent on the feet, underrated a little bit on the feet, honestly. He's got decent wrestling. He's got a decent ground game as well. He's hard to sub. He's hard to finish. He's hard to get out of there. So I think this is going to be a war back and forth. It's going to be interesting. I mean, both these guys are going to be going for takedowns at times. Both these guys are going to obviously have some success striking on the feet as well. I just think that Glenn's toughness, his ability to push a high pace, is just kind of outwork Nover along the way. And I don't think Nover's going to be able to finish Glenn. I think Glenn's going to actually have problems finishing Nover as well. But I think if anybody gets a stop here, it's probably Glenn. So with everything being said, I do think you have to lean Glenn's way. I think he's just going to, like I said, work a little bit harder, a little bit more, and a little bit more effectively in this fight against Nover. And I think he's going to pull away with a comfortable but close competitive decision win over Nover.
I'm definitely a big fan of Rick Glenn. I mean, he's a talented striker. He has a very good ground game. He's solid from top position. He has a decent guard. He just really has everything going for him. The only thing he didn't have going for him was a short notice UFC debut in the lightweight division, up a weight class, basically, against a really solid veteran in Evan Dunham. That was just way too much for him, and it obviously showed. He was just out-muscled and beat up over the course of three rounds, but he hanged tough. He showed a lot of heart in that fight, even though he was outmatched. And as Nick said, Nover isn't an easy out because he is a kind of a savvy veteran at this point, having fought just around the world, been in the UFC twice now, and Nover's had a tough run lately. I mean, last fight against Hayden Barrow. Before that, he took on Tukhugov. So Nover definitely has not had it easy either. But I do think that Rick Glenn can win this fight. Nover probably has the kicking edge. Nover probably has a slight wrestling edge. But other than that, I think Rick Glenn has him beat just about everywhere else. So I think Rick Glenn can just score some points here and potentially take over late if Nova starts to fade. And I think Rick Glenn can win a comfortable decision. So I'm going to side with Glenn. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Ryan LaFleur, who is 12-1, taking on Rowan Carnero, who is 21-10. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Up in LaFleur, minus 270. The comeback on Carnero at plus 190. Right now, looking over at Five Dimes, it is minus 280 for LaFleur. Comeback on Carnero is plus 240. So the line margins have tightened up a little bit. Nothing too crazy going on. I think the line's about right. More parlay action probably coming in on LaFleur. Not surprising at all. And this is a tough one to bet. I think the line's pretty decent here where it's at because Carnero definitely has a good all-around game. Underrated striking. Of course, he's more well-known for his grappling style. Underrated wrestling. So everywhere the fight takes place, he's definitely capable of winning the fight and at least being competitive with some great, great fighters. I mean, throughout his career, look at his resume. He's faced top-of-the-line competition, and he's done relatively well against them as well. And now I think he's kind of – even though he's getting – obviously, towards the end of his career at age 38, I think mentally he has never been better. Like, he's the smartest he's ever been. He's just in a good state of mind right now and making, you know, his another run here in the UFC, his recent run in the UFC, I should say, has been a little bit up and down. But overall, he still looked pretty good. And I think here, obviously, at welterweight, it's a better division for him. But he is facing a tough, tough test in LaFleur. LaFleur, to me, is the ultimate grinder. I mean, the guy, again, pushes a high pace. His stand-up is a little bit underrated. He's got some power on the feet. He can mix things up well. He gets the fight to the floor most times when he wants it. You can't sub the guy. He's got good sub defense. I shouldn't say can't, but it's very tough. Obviously, he's never been submitted to get the submission win over LaFleur. So he game everywhere the fight takes place, and I think that's going to be the difference here. I don't think Carnero is going to be able to hurt LaFleur on the feet. I think LaFleur is going to actually be able to dictate the pace of this fight, whether it's standing or on the ground, get more top position, and just kind of outpoint Carnero to a win. Now, another concern would be, I think, out of the two guys, I mean, Carnero has been knocked out three times throughout his career, and he's 38 years old. So can LaFleur knock him out? I wouldn't expect it, but it's not impossible. So I think LaFleur could knock out Carnero. I think LaFleur could grind him out, obviously, as well. So you got to go with him. I think he does win this fight, and he continues to make some noise at 170 pounds.
I just think this is a tough matchup for Rowan Carnero. Carnero just doesn't quite have that same grappling ability that Damian Maia had, and that's really the only time that Ryan LaFleur has been in a lot of trouble in his career. LaFleur has looked really good against everybody else. He has great wrestling. His stand-up has come a long way with his work with Henry Hooft. He has a high motor. LaFleur really just is a tremendous athlete and a talented welterweight fighter. And Rowan Carnero, He's a veteran. He has a really good ground game, and that helped him pick up an impressive win over Mark Munoz. But other than that, I just don't think that Carnero can keep up. He's not a great striker. He's not an amazing wrestler. He basically just has a good submission game, and I don't see him tapping out Ryan LaFleur, especially when Damian Maia couldn't do it when he faced him in a 5-round fight. So I think at some point Ryan LaFleur just starts to take over, and I think he can even get a late finish here against Carnero. So my pick is going to be Ryan LaFleur. Now, next up, we're not going to do an extensive breakdown on this fight because they literally just had a last-minute replacement. Marcin Tybura's 14-2. He's taken on UFC newcomer Justin Willis, and Willis is 4-1. Personally, I think that Tybura will be a little bit too much for him just with experience, but Willis is out of American Kickboxing Academy, trains with Kane and Cormier, so he might, you know, bring a couple surprises. You might remember him from the Fight Factory TV series where he made his pro debut, I believe. So we're going to skip that fight, though. No major breakdowns. So moving on, we have the Fox Sports 1 prelims, and we're going to have a flyweight contest as Ian McCall, who is 13-5-1, takes on another UFC newcomer in Jared Brooks, who is 12-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in McCall, minus 185. The comeback on Brooks at plus 145. To my surprise, the line has dropped all the way down to a pick'em. It looks like across the Donbass screen right now, there's a lot of minus 110s out there. At five dimes, Brooks is actually favored at minus 115. Comeback on McCall, minus 105. So line actually flipped there. I'm surprised because I thought, honestly, a guy coming in on short notice like Brooks is coming in on, a lot of people might not know much about Brooks as well. And McCall obviously has been one of the marquee guys at 125 pounds for a long time. I know he's had some bad luck getting fights with the UFC booked and kind of keeping them booked because people have been pulling out left and right. And he has his fair share of last minute hiccups as well, pulling on a couple himself. But that being said, McCall is still a very talented fighter, is still one of the best 125 pounders in the world. So coming in on short notice, taking on a fighter like McCall is never an easy task. So I really was surprised with the early action. Obviously, people out there that came in early on did their homeworks on Brooks. Brooks is a very talented fighter. This is going to be a heck of a scrap. So I can understand the early action coming in on Brooks. A little disappointed, to be honest with you. But that being said, this is going to be a heck of a fight. I mean, I'll start off with Brooks first of all. Obviously, he's coming in, like I mentioned, on short notice. He has fought, honestly, at 115 pounds before, so he's kind of small. He's only 5'3" as well. For 125 pounds for the flyweight division, he is a little undersized. But that being said, he's also fought a bantamweight before, and he was able to obviously have success as an undefeated fighter in that weight class. So he's bounced around from bantamweight all the way down to 115 pounds, and now he's settling at 125 pounds. So he is a little small, but he has that championship wrestling background. I mean, the guy is a legit prospect. He's really good everywhere. He's technical, powerful, pushes a very high pace. I mean, there's not much to hate about this guy. He definitely has a little bit of pop on his punches. He has an aggressive style that he always, again, is on top of it. He goes for takedowns, usually has success there. He can submit you. He can knock you out. I mean, he is a prospect and a half. At age 23, I think really the sky's the limit for Brooks, honestly. So, again, I can understand the early action coming in on Brooks, especially at the opening price of a dog. I can really dig it. But that being said, again, you can't count McCall out. McCall has outstanding wrestling, as we all know. He has some speed on the feet, has some power. He has obviously the experience edge where he's faced the who's who, you know, in the 125-pound division. Obviously, he's given Demetrius Johnson, the champion, as we all know, one of his toughest challenges to date as well. So McCall is no easy out at all. So this is going to be a stern test. I mean, can McCall pull out a victory over a hungry young fighter coming in, making his debut, trying to knock him off? It's possible, but honestly, I'm going to lean a little bit towards more Brooks right now too. I don't really like the way the line's going with Brooks being about a pick 'em or a slight favorite. But to be honest with you, I think that McCall has seen his, you know, best days are kind of behind him right now, even though he's more than capable of pulling off quality wins. I'm not going to say the guy's totally past it, but I still think there's a little bit of a decline with McCall, and I think Brooks is that young, hungry lion that's going to actually come in here and put on a heck of a show. So I'm expecting a very, very competitive fight because this fight's going to take place in all areas, on the ground, standing up, obviously. I mean, we're going to see a little bit of everything in this pure MMA fight here, but I think that Brooks is going to squeak out probably decision win and get the W in his UFC debut. So that's going to be pretty impressive if he does it. So my pick is going to be Jared Brooks making his successful UFC debut.
And I'm going to come in a little bit on the opposite side. The main thing here is Brooks is stepping in on short notice. He is typically a strawweight, fights at 115 pounds. Now, granted, he might be the best 115 pounder on the planet, but that being said, Ian McCall is one of the best 125 pounders on the planet. McCall has been extremely unlucky lately. I mean, he has had fight after fight after fight, either get canceled at the last minute or had times where he got sick or he had a bad weight cut or his opponents had bad weight cuts or his opponents got sick. I mean, this poor guy just cannot get a fight. And then he was supposed to face Neil Siri here. Siri drops out, but Jared Brooks steps in. Thank God. And I hope that this goes through because this guy just needs a fight. Now that being said, Brooks is super talented. He is a little bit more of a grappler, but he has definitely been adding some striking to his game. He is good friends with Justin Scoggins down at American Top Team. They've kind of complement each other. Scoggins was more of a stand-up guy, all focused on kicks, and Brooks was more of a grappler, all focused on wrestling. And They really became best friends and they worked with each other and they've complemented each other's games pretty well. And now Brooks is a lot more well-rounded. And obviously we've seen Scoggins focus a lot more on takedowns and everything in his fights. So I think that they've complemented each other nicely. But that being said, Ian McCall is going to be cutting a lot of weight. From a recent interview, I think Jared Brooks is basically just going to be coming in and stepping on the scale without cutting any weight at all, hardly. I think he was 129 pounds a week ago. So this is a tough fight for him. I mean, Ian McCall is going to be a lot bigger, a lot stronger. He might be able to bully him around a little. Brooks will be the younger, quicker guy, but I don't know how much faster you can really be in the flyweight division. So we'll see. I mean, if he can dance circles around McCall, that will be amazing. But I think McCall might just be able to bully him a little bit, press him into the fence, get some takedowns. And who knows? I haven't seen a lot of Brooks off of his back. What happens if McCall does put him on his back and beat him up a little bit? So I think we're going to learn a lot about just how good this Brooks kid is. And I expect this will be a very fun fight, but I'm going to side with Ian McCall. I think that he's going to unleash a lot of pent-up frustration in this fight. Now, moving up to the lightweight division, we have Nick Lentz, who is 29-7-2 with one no contest, taking on Islam Makhachev, who is 13-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
This line went a little crazy. I opened Makhachev minus 130 to come back on Lentz minus 110. Obviously, it was a low opener because right now it's Makhachev minus 300. The comeback on Lentz is at plus 250. So a lot of respect coming in on Makhachev on his way. No respect going towards Nick Lentz here. I understand Lentz has been, you know, obviously returning to 155 pounds after a run at 145 pounds or whatnot. Lentz has been in the UFC for a long time. He's faced quality competition and his best days are probably behind him. And Makhachev, age 25, more of the young gun. He's going to be physically bigger than Lentz in this spot and just the style matchup. Makhachev should be able to be the stronger, the better grinder in this matchup as well. Lentz isn't really extremely dangerous on the feet. His submission game's okay as well, but he's not going to – unless you get caught in Lentz's guillotine choke, I don't think he's going to be able to just dominate his with submissions here against Makhachev either. So it's going to be hard for Lentz to sub. Makhachev is probably going to be hard for him to knock him out, and Makhachev is probably going to be outpointing him. And that's why everybody I think is coming in this way. And I do get it. I just didn't realize it was going to go all the way up, obviously, where it is now at minus 300. I think a little bit more disrespect taking place on Lentz because Lentz is a pretty decent fighter. I mean, he's fought, again, quality competition and hung with quality competition throughout his career. He's always done better, even against guys that people thought were going to, you know, handle him easily, like Mendez, for example. He was able to obviously do a little bit better. People can say what they want about Mendez maybe not being 100% with the illness or whatnot, but still Lentz did a little bit better in that fight. He still lost, so that's the bottom line. I mean, he's been losing, you know, when he has stepped up to a certain level, he's not been coming through in those fights, and maybe Makhachev is that level. I mean, he's, again, another highly touted prospect. He's looked great so far, minus his setback, obviously, against Martins, getting caught in that fight, knocked out. He's looked pretty good. I mean, his last fight against Chris Wade, I think, is a lot of similarities to the Lentz fight. Obviously, Chris Wade is known for his grinding style as well. He's okay striker on the feet, and that's exactly what he's facing here in Nick Lentz. Even though they're different fighters, I guess it's kind of a similar matchup. So I think people got confidence with Makhachev when he defeated Wade, and now they think there's, again, Lentz has probably passed it a little bit, and this should be a relatively easy win for Makhachev. I think it's going to be competitive. I'm not going to pick against Makhachev here because I do understand it and I see it. I just think the line kind of got wacky here. And I think, I mean, if you, again, Lentz comes to fight, he's going to make it competitive. I mean, unless he spends the entire three rounds on his back, I'm expecting a very competitive decision here. So we'll see what Makhachev can bring to the table here and what kind of game plan he implements. But I do see him winning this fight. I'm just not sold at him at this price at minus 300. So again, I'm going to tell everybody be careful, especially right now. I mean, if you got in on it early, I understand. Good luck to you guys. But if you're going to try to lay it and parlay it at minus 300, I would probably stay away at this point, honestly. But I'm going to pick Makhachev to win.
Yeah, my main issue with this fight is the fact that everything that Nick Lentz likes to do, I think Makhachev does a little bit better. Lentz likes to grind. Makhachev is insanely talented with his wrestling and grappling and takedowns. And Lentz pushes a high pace. I think Makhachev can keep up that pace. And Lentz is not a great striker, but he has a good motor, and he can toss out some volume. But I think Makhachev can match him on the feet. Makhachev has trouble against, like, elite strikers. I mean, Adriel Martins, obviously. But against somebody like Lentz, I think he'll have relatively no issue. So in this fight, I just think Nick Lentz is going to be on the defensive a lot more often than he's used to. I think he can get put on his back in this fight. And Islam Makhachev, if just one fight ago, I mean, he faced Chris Wade, a guy that is really good grappler, a really good wrestler, and Makhachev was just a better grappler and a better wrestler and repeatedly got top position, and he won the scrambles, and I think he's going to win the scrambles against Nick Lentz too. So as long as Makhachev doesn't get caught, and I don't think that Nick Lentz really has the power to catch him, and as long as he doesn't leave his neck exposed to a guillotine, because Nick Lentz will jump on those, but as long as he doesn't get caught, then he should be fine, and I think that he doesn't get caught. So I'm going to pick Islam Makhachev to win this fight. Now, dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Wilson Hayes, who is 21-6, taking on Olga Sasaki, who is 19-3-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Hayes, -350. The comeback on Sasaki at +250. Right now, looking over at five times, it's -650 for Hayes. Sasaki is at +475. So this is one of three lines that went totally crazy here, with a lot of action coming in Hayes' way early on, obviously. I mean, again, that's another spot that I get it. It's grappler versus grappler, and Hayes is obviously the better grappler. But at the price now, it's insane. I mean, Sasaki is not a bum exactly. I mean, he has a good grappling base in his own right. I mean, if it wasn't fighting Hayes, a lot of times he has the advantage underground over most people he fights. Now, again, here he won't against Hayes. Hayes is the better wrestler. Hayes is obviously the better jiu-jitsu practitioner as well. So I do see a way for Hayes to win this fight and maybe make it look kind of easy doing so. But the truth is, Sasaki, with his length for 125 pounds, is not easy to deal with, even on the feet. He doesn't have a ton of knockout power, but the guy is capable of landing some decent strikes, being effective on the feet a little bit. Especially Hayes has run into knees and whatnot before as well, so he's been knocked out. It's not like he's got a granite chin, and at age 32, with the wars that he's been in, he's not exactly on the younger side either. So Sasaki on the feet, it'll be close, because Hayes is striking game has improved as well, but I think Sasaki still has some problems on the feet for Hayes. And if Hayes doesn't implement that grappling style right away and can go for the takedowns and get top position, then he could be in some trouble here. But overall, I think that he is going to implement that style. That's why I think a lot of the action is coming his way as well. I think a lot of people believe it's going to be easy money for him on the ground, and it might be. I mean, Sasaki was beat on the ground by Issa. We all know that as well. So I think that's given a lot of people some confidence. You know, in the UFC, he made just an outstanding splash on the scene with, you know, his ground game. But then again, I mean, him getting beat on the ground, I think, just basically dropped his stock even more so. And now he's facing one of the most talented grapplers in the UFC in Hayes. So I get it. I just think the line's getting ridiculous right now. So for me, I'm going to pick Hayes to win, because I do think that he outgrinds, out-wrestles, out-grapples Sasaki. Maybe he finishes Sasaki along the way. If not, I think he probably gets a decision on the scorecards. But at -600, no, I don't believe it should be that high. And I think Sasaki's probably going to put on a better fight than most people are thinking right now. So my pick is Hayes, but another spot where I do think the line kind of got a little bit crazy.
I think this fight is going to play out a little bit like Olga Sasaki against Issa back in when he was in the bantamweight division. And Sasaki came in with a wave of hype, and then he found himself on the defensive for the first time. Issa was aggressive on the feet. I think Hayes will be aggressive on the feet. And then Issa got top position on the ground and just started laying into him. And then that opened up a finish. So I honestly think that Wilson Hayes at right now is fighting at about as good as he's fought in his entire career. He understands what got him here. He knows that his stand-up, while he does know what he's doing up there, he's a lot more vulnerable on the feet because his chin isn't amazing, and he knows that his bread and butter is the ground, and he gets fights to the ground, and then he taps people out, or he wins decisions because he is a great scrambler on the canvas too. So I expect that this fight, while on the feet, Sasaki will try to use his length. I think Hayes closes the distance, and I think Hayes puts him on his back. And Sasaki, as long and wild and crazy as he can be on the ground, he's not as amazing off of his back as you'd think. And I just think Hayes pummels him on the canvas and gets the win. But there is a small opportunity, a window there for Sasaki to catch him coming in. Sasaki will have that reach advantage early, but I just don't think it's going to matter. So I'm siding with Wilson Hayes as well. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have a welterweight contest between Randy Brown, who is 9-1, and Bilal Muhammad, who is 10-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Up in Brown, minus 135, the comeback on Muhammad at minus 105. Right now, over five dimes, it's minus 130 for Brown. The comeback on Muhammad is plus 110. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Two action coming into this fight. And it's another tough one. I mean, Brown coming to the UFC, of course, he did some great things early on, and then he suffered a little bit of a setback. And he got, I don't want to say exposed, but it is what it is. But he's a promising prospect at age 26 years old. I mean, he's obviously rebounded nicely with his win over Camozzi in his last fight. I mean, that was a very impressive performance because Brian Camozzi is another one of these guys that obviously Chris Camozzi being his brother, a lot of people were looking forward to Camozzi competing in the UFC, and a lot of people thought he would actually win, beat Brown. So that wasn't an easy win for him, but he got the job done, and he looked impressive doing so against Camozzi. So solid win. Montano, that win over Montano was pretty solid as well. And then in my opinion, honestly, even though he had that setback against Graves, I mean, Michael Graves is a tremendous fighter, underrated fighter as well, especially in the grappling department. So I'm not even going to really take that much away from Brown with that loss, but he does have significant advantages over people with his reach. In most cases, he will hear again, Brown. I mean, he's got, I believe, a 6-inch reach advantage over Muhammad in this fight. He fights long. He's got a little bit of pop on his punches. Not a ton of power in a stand-up game, but he's unorthodox, and he uses that length pretty well. So he can beat you up on the feet. He does have a underrated ground game somewhat. He's shown it time and time again with those long limbs. I mean, he could get around your neck and choke you. He can, obviously, he scrambles pretty decent with his guard game. He's got those limbs that he can, you know, throw up a quick arm bar, get you in a triangle choke. He gets you in trouble off his back as well, or obviously from the top. So Brown is a pretty complete fighter with that length, with that youth, only getting better fight by fight. So there's a lot of good things to say about Brown. For Muhammad, obviously, Brian and I actually in his last fight, we were pretty confident Luque would get the W over Muhammad, and he did just that. So unfortunately for Muhammad, he suffered a quick knockout loss to the hands of Luque, and his chin has been suspect. That's one of the most concerning things for me is Muhammad's defense. I mean, he does seem to have decent footwork, but he doesn't get his head off center. And a lot of times he gets popped and his chin is not really been that great. I mean, look at some of the fights, not just that knockout loss that he just had against Luque, but I mean, against Joban, he almost got finished multiple times in that fight as well. And he's been rocked even before that, before he came to the UFC. So Muhammad's chin is definitely suspect. His defense could be a little bit better, but outside of that, Muhammad's a pretty talented fighter. I mean, you want to talk about boxing. He implements his kicking game pretty decent as well. I think he's got underrated wrestling where he's able to have great timing on his takedowns, to be honest with you. I mean, Muhammad's able to get the fight to the floor most times as well. So he's a pretty good fighter. I mean, he's going to outpoint most competitors. So if he doesn't get finished in this fight, I think it's going to probably happen as well. If you look at Brown, even against Montano, I mean, he was put on his back. And I think that Muhammad's wrestling and his timing with his takedowns are well enough that he's probably going to set Brown on his back. And I don't think Muhammad gets submitted against Brown off his back. So I think Muhammad, if he doesn't get basically caught, knocked out, rocked on his feet, or maybe rocked and then subbed, I think he's probably going to end up winning this fight on the scorecards, or even maybe finishing this fight on the ground against Brown. So I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Muhammad here. Now, I should note he is coming in on short notice here. So that could be a negative for Muhammad, obviously, but pretty much Muhammad's always in decent shape, and I don't think it's going to be a huge issue here. But that is something to take in consideration. But for me, I just think Muhammad here, even though I picked against him in his last fight against Luque, I think this is a different matchup for him, and I think he's ahead of Brown right now. So I think Muhammad's just the better fighter. So if he doesn't get finished, I think he wins the fight, so I'm going to go his way.
Yeah, this is a tricky fight. Obviously, Randy Brown has a huge reach advantage. He is one of the tallest, lankiest, longest fighters in the division. He's The only one that has a bigger reach than him in the welterweight division is Neil Magny. So he has that going for him, and he's starting to look pretty good. I mean, his last fight, he was rock solid. UFC debut was a little shaky, but he won it. And the fight that I'm a little concerned about was the Graves fight, where he was put on his back repeatedly and then eventually submitted. That could happen here. Bilal Muhammad is an aggressive striker, but if he really wants to win this fight, I think he's going to have to go to that wrestling. He hasn't really used it much in the UFC yet, but this could definitely be a prime opportunity because Randy Brown, with that huge length, he gives him a big center and high center of gravity, and I think that Muhammad can topple him over and get him on his back. That being said, Muhammad in three fights so far has been dropped or hurt about 5 times. I mean, it is just nuts. The amount of damage this guy has taken and the fact that he just repeatedly keeps taking short notice fights without training camp, full training camps, and he keeps coming back quickly after fights where he was getting hurt. So I'm definitely really concerned about Muhammad. I mean, this guy pushes an insane pace in fights. He can get inside. He has high volume. He has great conditioning. So he can wear you down, but I think Randy Brown is probably going to knock him out at some point. I thought Brown looked great in his last fight, and I think that he's young and on the rise, a really good prospect, and he's only going to get better. He's the kind of guy that really does put the work in to really improve all of his skills in between fights. And I think that this could be a great showcase for Brown as long as he can avoid getting put on his back and avoid letting Muhammad get in on him and get some points. So I'm going to side with Randy Brown. I'm a little concerned about the takedowns and everything, but I think that Brown can get it done. Now, moving on to the first fight on the main card, we have a lightweight contest with Dustin Poirier, who is 20-5, taking on Jim Miller, who is 28-8 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I've been Poirier -190, the comeback on Miller at +150. This is the other line I was talking about that went crazy. Right now it's Poirier -470, the comeback on Miller at +375. I am a little bit surprised that it got that kind of crazy right now. I mean, both these guys are obviously UFC vets. They've been around for a long time. Again, fought in top-tier competition throughout their career. Poirier obviously looking better as of late. I mean, there's no question about it, especially since he moved back up to 155. I mean, he's put on a nice little run. Unfortunately for him, it came to an end against Michael Johnson. But that being said, before that, I mean, the guy was looking like a serious threat at 155 pounds. But Miller, one of these guys that's been obviously in the lightweight division for a long time, has faced quality competition. And for a while there, he was, I mean, one of the top, you know, 2, 3, 4 guys in the lightweight division. Now, he hasn't been that guy for a while, and he's obviously – I'm towards the end of his career at age 33. I mean, he's faced so many tough guys in the UFC thus far, and you know, he seems to be slowing down a little bit. He had a pretty good win over Thiago Alves in his last fight, though, and before that, that war with Lozon that was controversial, could have went either way. So he still has something in the tank. In fact, he's actually looked better the last couple fights, in my opinion. He's got more confidence. You know, he's got – obviously, he was diagnosed with some health issues. He's got that under control a little bit more. So I think Miller is definitely – a lot more of a threat than people are realizing against Poirier, because Poirier, man, I mean, the guy, again, ultra talented everywhere the fight takes place, especially the striking realm, but he does have somewhat of a suspect chin. I hate to say that. He's only been knocked out a couple times in his career, but he's even, again, beyond that, he's been stunned. He was able to recover in some fights and finish off the fight strong. But that being said, I don't know. I can't trust it, especially since he's coming off a knockout loss to Michael Johnson. Now, Michael Johnson hits a lot harder than Jim Miller, but Jim Miller does have a little bit of power in his punches as well. His stand-up is a little bit underrated. So I'm not saying that Miller's going to outstrike Poirier. I mean, if they stand and bang, Poirier should get the best of Miller more times than not. And obviously, that's what a lot of people are thinking here as well. That's why they came in that way. But at the current price, I think it is a little bit absurd. I think there's a lot of underestimating Miller right now in this spot. So I'm not going to pick Miller to win, because I do think that Poirier probably comes away with the win here, maybe gets a finish, but if not, he probably wins on the scorecards as well. But man, another spot where I think the line is absolutely crazy right now. There very well could be some value on Jim Miller, plus 375 as an underdog. So we'll see how it plays out, but I'm going to pick Poirier to win because I do think that he bounces back and gets back on track after a pretty successful run at lightweight. So this is a much needed win for him, even though he's been okay, because it gets him right back on track and right back in the mix of things. So my pick is going to be Poirier to win.
Dustin Poirier was looking like a destroyer of worlds after moving up to the lightweight division. And then he ran into Michael Johnson last fight and he got clipped and he never recovered and got put out. So honestly, stepping into this fight against Jim Miller, there's a couple things that are a bit worrying. Miller doesn't have a ton of power, but he does have good boxing fundamentals. And if Poirier isn't careful, Miller can clip him and put him out. So I wouldn't put it past a veteran like Jim Miller to do that. Also, Poirier has occasionally had fights where he takes the fight to the floor. That would be a disaster against Miller, because Miller is not only very dangerous on the ground from top position, but he has a good guard off of his back. He's pulled off some heel hooks. He's pulled off some arm bars. So you just, if I'm Dustin Poirier, I just want to do a stand up fight against Jim Miller and I just try to take Jim Miller's head off. Now Miller has a pretty good chin overall, but he did finally get that chin cracked when he fought Donald Cerrone. Now I don't see Dustin Poirier landing a ton of head kicks Cerrone style, but I can see him boxing up Jim Miller and landing some huge power shots and following up with that and maybe getting Miller out that way. Miller did get flustered a little bit against Nate Diaz on the feet. And if Poirier can just have a good, strong, aggressive attack against Miller and just swarm him a little bit and not give him a lot of room to breathe on the feet, I think that a finish is very possible here. Miller has looked better ever since he found out about the Lyme disease that was kind of preventing him from progressing with his career. And he's been getting that treated, and he's definitely looked better his last few fights. But I think Dustin Poirier at this point in time is just on another level compared to him. And I think Poirier's power will be the difference here. So I'm going to side with Poirier. Now moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Glover Teixeira, who is 25-5, taking on Jared Cannonier, who is 9-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I've been Teixeira minus 210, the comeback, in Cannonier at plus 160. Line dropped immediately, but now it's come back up to minus 190 Teixeira, the comeback on Cannonier plus 165. So early action was on the dog, and now line margins have tightened up a little bit, and it's kind of back to up to where it was because there's action coming in on Teixeira as well. So this is a tough fight because, again, another situation where you got the young gun that's not really a young gun in Cannonier going against the savvy vet that's been one of the best light heavyweights in the world now for a few years at least. Teixeira is definitely top of the food chain. And when it comes across every skill set in the UFC, to be honest with you, I mean, boxing, Teixeira is on point. I mean, he's got power in his fists. Obviously, he can do some damage on the feet. He can knock people out. Wrestling, I mean, there's not many that are going to out-wrestle a guy like Glover Teixeira. So he's got, I mean, his wrestling is solid, to say the least. Jiu-jitsu, one of the best grapplers in the UFC, submission artist in the UFC, period. So there's not many weaknesses to Teixeira's game. I mean, there's one I could say is his chin. I mean, he's been knocked out a couple times throughout his career. And unfortunately for him, one of them was just his last fight against Anthony Johnson, where he just got destroyed early on in that fight. I mean, under 20 seconds, I believe, was the official time in that fight, with Anthony Johnson just destroying him. So that being said, he's bouncing back in his very next fight, and he's facing another guy. I mean, not Anthony Johnson power, but another guy that has shown pretty decent striking ability. I mean, we've said it time and time again that Cannonier, I mean, especially since his last fight, he's been more than impressive, honestly, because throughout with that fight, I should say, it put him on the map. I mean, with Kudalaba, I mean, if you look at his fight before that, even with Asker, I mean, the beautiful combinations he had to win that fight was something else as well. So a very tough gritty win over Kudalaba that he honestly, as the fight went, he looked better and better. And then, like I said, the striking that he put on display against Asker was more than impressive. So two very solid wins for Cannoneer, which has impressed everybody. I mean, a lot of people are thinking that this guy is definitely one of the better strikers since he moved down to 205 pounds, a huge threat to a lot of people. So Teixeira facing a guy that has a tremendous amount of knockout power, that's not sloppy either, that has good technique when he goes about his striking, a guy like Cannoneer, training with the guys at the MMA lab has only improved his game since his UFC debut as well. So a lot of good things, a lot of good positive momentum coming in right now for Cannoneer. And he's facing, I mean, a guy that was just fighting for the title not long ago. So this is a very strange matchup because, like I said, there's not a lot of flaws in Teixeira's game, but he's facing a guy that could possibly knock him out. And I think a lot of the early action was based on just that. I mean, a guy coming off of a devastating knockout loss that's 37 years old, that his best days are probably behind him, against a guy that, again, not really a young gun because he's 32 years old, Cannoneer, but a guy that's still young in MMA, in his MMA career, that's actually gaining a little bit of confidence, that has a tremendous amount of knockout power to go along with it. In my opinion, this is a lose-lose situation for Teixeira, because if he beats Cannoneer, people are going to say, hey, who cares? He was supposed to win that fight. But if he loses, it's devastating for his career. And then Cannoneer, it's a big win for him. Obviously, it's a huge mark in his resume. So I think the matchmaking here says that as well. A lot of people do believe, including the UFC matchmakers, that Cannoneer has a legit shot against Teixeira. So if he's able to keep off his back, I can see it. I mean, I think that Cannoneer can definitely knock Teixeira out. But the problem with that is he has to stay off his back. And, of course, he's been taken down throughout his career. He's got decent takedown defense, and he's got the ability to get off his back. But Teixeira is just on another level a lot of times on the ground. So that's what scares me about this fight. I would say Cannoneer is a very live dog. I think, you know what I mean, there's a possibility he goes out there and knocks Teixeira out. But the ground game scares me, and I think Teixeira definitely trumps him in that area. And coming off of a devastating knockout loss like he did, I think Teixeira is obviously going to utilize his strength and get this fight to the ground. So I'm going to pick Glover to win this fight because of the ground game specifically. But again, another dangerous spot. Honestly, laying 2-1 right now over a knockout artist like Cannoneer that's got a little bit of momentum on his side, got a little bit of confidence on his side in the matchup that's taking place here, I don't know if I would be confidently betting that or laying that juice. So it's probably a dog or pass situation, but I'm going to pick Teixeira mainly because he's the better ground guy.
I definitely think the ground game is going to be a big factor in this fight. Obviously, both guys will start standing. And in the stand-up, while Teixeira definitely has more experience, Cannoneer does have that athletic explosive power where he can just put guys' lights out. If he can connect, he looked really good in his win over Cyril Asker. And that was actually a really impressive knockout. Like, he showcased some combination work and some movement that you just don't normally see when that was a heavyweight fight. So in the heavyweight division, I mean, he just blew Asker away. And then Asker's a good fighter. He just won his last fight. So that was really impressive. And then he took on Kudalaba, who had already picked up a win in the UFC, and I thought, especially as that fight wore on, that Cannoneer really took over, and he looked great. The main thing there that I was concerned about were the takedowns that he gave up. Yes, he did get back up, and yeah, he reversed a couple of them, but when you get taken down 6 times by a guy that doesn't even have that great a wrestling, that's a concern. Kudalaba is not nearly as good of a grappler or a wrestler as Glover Teixeira. So if Teixeira is able to close the distance on Cannoneer and put him on his back, I think it could be like a repeat of the Ovin St. Preux fight where, Teixeira just wore St. Preux down and then eventually tapped him out. So, that being said, when this is in the stand-up, at any moment, there is a possibility for a knockout for either guy, because you got to remember, Cannoneer got knocked out in his UFC debut against Sean Jordan. He ate a big shot. So either guy could put each other's lights out at any moment on the feet. It is a complete toss-up to me. But if it goes to the ground, I give a huge edge to Glover Teixeira. So I think he plays it smart. He does have a good fight IQ, and he did that against St. Preux, and I think he'll do it here. So I'm going to side with Glover Teixeira. I think this might be just a little bit too much too soon for Cannoneer, even if Teixeira is coming off of a brutal knockout loss. I think that he can still pull this one out. So I'm going to side with Glover Teixeira. Now, dropping down to the middleweight division, we have Jacare Souza, who is 23-4 with one no contest, taking on Tim Boach, who is 20-10. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I put Souza minus 765, the comeback on Boach at plus 455. Crazy, I know, crazy high line, but at the same time, kind of justified. But early action was on Boach, and it dropped the line a little bit. Right now, Souza's minus 525, the comeback on Boach is at plus 415. So really, if you look at it, line margins have tightened up. The comeback on Boach went from plus 455 to plus 415. So that's what you got to kind of look at the most here. So a little bit of a drop in the dog, but they are starting to get some action back on Souza, and line margins have tightened up a little bit as well. And obviously Jacare Souza is going to be the guy that people are throwing in parlays and have a lot more confidence is betting in props as well. They're going to bet, obviously Jacare by submission and across the board. So there is going to be a ton of action on Jacare, and there's going to be a lot of people out there that do support Boach by knockout because that's going to be his path to victory as well. So I don't want to spend a ton of time on this fight. It is what it is. It's Jacare is honestly, I think, better across the board. The only one thing that Jacare might not be as well, I don't know. I mean, because Boach has been knocked out a few times in his career now as well. So I would say if any flaw that Jacare has is he has been rocked, obviously, in fights. I mean, several times. He's been knocked out officially twice in his career. But again, it's one of those situations that he's been rocked even more so than that. So his chin is a little bit suspect. But as far as striking goes, for a jiu-jitsu practitioner, for not just an ordinary jiu-jitsu practitioner, for an elite, one of the world's best in Jacare, his striking is actually pretty good. He's got some pop behind his punches. I mean, he's technical with it. He's a really good striker. So Jacare is better, I think, overall in the striking department over Boach. I think Jacare is obviously a lot better on the ground. His wrestling's better. He just has a check mark across every area. But again, Boach has enough power, and he does have obviously a wrestling background in his own right. If he's able to keep this fight upright and land on Jacare's chin, he can knock him out. It wouldn't be a shock. So he does have a puncher's chance. I mean, that's basically the only way I think he wins this fight. So, again, I think it is justified, a huge price here. I mean, whenever Boach has really stepped up to that high, high-level competition, he's been getting beat. And I think Jacare is honestly one of the best middleweights, obviously, in the world for a reason. I don't like the fact that he is 37 years old now. He is getting older. His chin's not going to get any better. But stylistically, this should be a good fight for him because he should be able to get this fight to the ground and then work his ground game and beat Boach. So that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to obviously pick Jacare Souza to win this fight.
I'm not going to waste much time on this fight. Tim Boach has been on a nice little resurgence that picked up some quality wins and got him back into the top 15 on my rankings, but Jacare Souza is a guy that could be the champion right now if it had gone the other way with the decision against Yoel Romero in a razor close fight. And I just don't think that Tim Boach is on his level. Tim Boach has improved recently. His stand-up has looked better. He's been more aggressive. He's been more aggressive with his wrestling. But guess what? Jacare's stand-up is better. Jacare has more punching power. Jacare's the better athlete. I think Jacare has better conditioning. And Jacare is light years better on the ground. I think this fight will be a lot similar to the Luke Rockhold fight where Boach just got overwhelmed by a superior fighter and then anything else. I do not see it being a repeat of like the Okami fight. So, I like Tim Boach, but I just do not see this one going well for him. So my pick is going to be Jacare Souza. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have another middleweight contest between former champion Anderson Silva, who is 33-8 with one no contest, taking on Derek Brunson, who is 16-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
What a tough fight. And it is a tough fight because of the aging Anderson Silva, one of the greatest of all time. So it's hard to make him an underdog still to this day. But he was. I opened Brunson minus 130, the comeback on Silva at minus 110. And since that time, there's been back and forth action, but more so on Brunson. He's at minus 140 right now over five dimes, and the comeback on Silva is at plus 120. So staying basically where it opened, again, line margins have tightened up, and there is two-way action in this fight, but a little bit more favoring Brunson here. And you know, it's hard to disagree, to be honest with you. And it's hard because, like I just said, you're talking about one of the all-time greats ever in the sport with Anderson Silva. I mean, what else can you say about him? He's just an incredible fighter. And in fact, I know that his setbacks against Weidman were something that you don't want to see as far as, you know, I mean, his knockout loss, obviously, when he was clowning and everybody could say what they say. And then obviously with that leg break, just the devastating injuries that he's had. And then coming back, I still don't think he looked, even in his win against Diaz, he didn't look that great or that dominant. And then, of course, Bisping beat him in a somewhat controversial decision there. But in my opinion, his last fight, when he stepped up on short notice to fight Daniel Cormier, I mean, we were expecting Cormier to do what he did and get the takedowns and whatnot with Anderson Silva. But Silva actually, I think, performed relatively well considering all that. I mean, he made it somewhat of a fight. I mean, it wasn't a controversial decision or anything like that, but still, I believe that a lot of people thought Cormier would probably stop Silva along the way and he would just dominate him that much more than he did. So Silva made it interesting, made it a fight. I mean, he showed some life in that fight, especially late, landing some nice kicks or whatnot. So, and you can never count the guy out. I mean, I think he's gained a little bit of confidence. And what I do like about Anderson Silva, when he had the middleweight title for so long, I mean, the pressure builds up. I don't care who you are, you're human. When you're expected to win every fight and just smoke people and just make a highlight reel out of every opponent that you face, you're going to kind of take that pressure upon yourself and you're not going to perform as well as you can at times, I think. And I think the pressure out of all those years defending all those, you know, all those successful title defenses, I should say, it kind of built up to the point where, I mean, the pressure was ridiculous. So in my mind, after he lost, I mean, nobody wants to lose, obviously, in that situation. But after he lost to Weidman both times, I think he kind of settled into, look, okay, I've lost now. I'm not the perfect fighter. Nobody's going to expect, you know, all the greatness I usually live up to or whatnot. And so I think he's kind of put less pressure on himself. And right now he's at a good spot mentally in his career. He enjoys fighting again. I mean, he's publicly said that. So there's a lot of good things to say about Silva. And I know a lot of it might not pertain to this fight, what I'm saying right now, but it does, because mentally, obviously, it's an important aspect of the fight. And I think that Silva's mind is at a good enough place where he's confident right now. He believes in himself a lot more than he has in a long time, which is good. And that could have an impact on this fight. But styles make fights. That being said, I still don't trust Silva's 41-year-old chin these days, obviously. It's not going to get any better, even though he's showed some life recently. I mean, he's been in some fights, got clipped, and he's been okay. I mean, it's pretty solid. I don't want to say he's got a terrible chin right now, but still, I don't trust that chin. 41 years old. He's facing a guy that can hit really hard, a guy that's recently come into his own with his power. I mean, Brunson has been knocking people out left and right. Of course, a lot of people are going to look at his last fight against Whitaker and think to themselves, wow, what a sloppy mess he was in that fight against a legit striker, and that striker obviously knocked him out. And that was, what a game plan that Brunson came up with. It was a sloppy mess of a fight against a very dangerous opponent of Whitaker. So I think Brunson's going to be a little bit more under control in this fight. He realizes what his strength is in this fight, and that's getting the fight to the floor and kind of out-grinding Silva. Brunson is more than capable of doing that. I mean, if any flaw in Brunson's career, it's been his chin as well. I mean, he's susceptible to getting knocked out, not just in the Whitaker fight, but before that as well. And not just that, I mean, he seems to fade as the fight goes on. So if it goes in round two, round three, he does start to slow down. So that is a concern, even if he's dominating the fight early on. I mean, can he go a hard three rounds? So he's won, obviously, decisions since then. His cardio has looked better as of late. But again, I mean, it is a head-scratcher how he looked against Whitaker. If he fights like that against Silva, he's going to lose that fight possibly too. I mean, Silva obviously has that precision, that crazy good timing and accuracy with the striking. So Brunson cannot afford to do that. I think he's going to come in with a smart game plan. He's going to look to ground Silva. And then if he gets the opportunity, obviously, to pound him out on the floor, or, I mean, possibly could clip that chin on the feet as well. Yeah, he could win. So I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Brunson because I think he does have more ways to win this fight. I think I could see Brunson, again, catching that chin, knocking him out. Possibly I could see Brunson out-grinding him and out-wrestling him to a decision win. Whereas Silva right now, I think that his main way of winning this fight, honestly, is probably just by finishing Brunson inside. So Brunson has more ways to win. I wouldn't exactly count Silva out, but I am leaning a little bit more towards Brunson in this fight.
Derek Brunson's fatal flaw was that he just fell in love with destroying people in a minute. He used to be a fighter that had no problem grinding it out if he needed to with his wrestling or mixing it up, going for head kicks, just you name it. I mean, this is a guy that was well on his way to beating Yoel Romero in a fight before he started to gas, and then Romero took over in the third round and put him away. So Derek Brunson definitely is super talented. It's just he is not a very technical striker. I've seen him obviously get destroyed by Whittaker, but before that, back in Strikeforce, Jacare just completely lit him up. And then, as we remember, Yoel did come back in the third round and take him out. So when he has faced the elite fighters, he has not fared very well. Anderson Silva is still an elite fighter. Now, does Anderson have elite takedown defense anymore? No. So I can see Brunson getting some takedowns. Does Anderson have elite chin? No. If Brunson lands some monster shots, I can see him putting Anderson Silva out. And does Anderson have the same movement that he used to have and ability to avoid damage? No. Michael Bisping, of all people, was able to crack him a few times and hurt him badly. So if Bisping can hurt him, then I think Brunson can hurt him. And I do think that Brunson can take him down, too. That being said, I just cannot pick against Anderson Silva here. I actually thought he looked pretty good in the Daniel Cormier fight. Silva was not able to stop Cormier's takedowns very well, but when they were in stand-up exchanges, Silva had some nasty stuff going. And at one moment, late in the third round, he did hurt Cormier to the body. So I think Silva still has a few tricks up his sleeve. And yes, I'm terrified that he's going to get finished in this fight. And I don't think I could bet it, but I do think that Anderson Silva can pull this one out. He still has what it takes to be one of the best fighters in the world. And I think that he can connect with Derek Brunson, and I think he can take care of business here. So I'm rooting for Anderson, and I'm picking Anderson. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have the inaugural UFC women's featherweight title, and it'll be Holly Holm, who is 10-2, taking on Jermaine De Rendami, who is 6-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Holm -130 to come back on De Rendami at even money. Right now, looking over at 5dimes.eu, it is Holm, the underdog. De Rendami is actually the favorite at -125. Holm is at +105. So line margins have tightened up, but they flipped as well. And a little bit more action coming in on De Rendami early on. Now, I'm a little bit surprised. I mean, Holm obviously the more popular fighter. If you look at De Rendami, her actual record, I believe it's like 6-3. So she's barely above 500. And then Holm, of course, again, records on paper don't really mean much. I mean, if you look at them, but she's 10-2, obviously had that devastating loss to Misha Tate, followed up by a pretty gritty fight against Shevchenko, but got beat by Shevchenko as well. So she suffered a couple losses now recently back-to-back, and she's getting a title fight at a weight class up at 145 pounds. So it's a crazy sport. I realize that. I mean, you lose two fights in a row and you get a different title fight. But that being said, it's hard to argue that Holm doesn't deserve it. I mean, she is definitely one of the best bantamweight women fighters in the world. And not just that. I mean, 145 pounds, obviously she'll hold her own there as well. So I understand it. I mean, you can't look at those two losses. You got to look beyond that. And Holly Holm is definitely a talented fighter, deserving, again, of a title shot. She needs to be in the mix because she is that good. And De Rendami, at the same time, I'm a little bit surprised that people came in her way. Because, again, I figured a little bit more hype and popularity be on Holm, and that would sway the public more her way. But honestly, they, again, early on, people must have done their homework a little bit, have faith in De Rendami. I mean, this is basically a striker versus striker matchup. And De Rendami, I think, is the best striker in the UFC as far as the females go. I mean, honestly, she's the best lady striker. Out of all the weight divisions, I think she is by far, technically speaking, she could be effective on the feet as well with her power. I mean, obviously a lot of people are going to say something about Cyborg or whatnot, but I'm talking about women that are under contract right now that are legitimately UFC fighters, and De Rendami is. And not that Cyborg is not, but she's been, you know, back and forth with Invicta or whatnot. So who knows what happens with Cyborg. I think she obviously gets the winner of this eventually. But that being said, I do think De Rendami is definitely the best female striker in the UFC. Holm is at the top of the food chain as well. I mean, she's obviously a multiple-time boxing world champion. That's been said time and time again. Her hands are good. Not just that. I mean, she obviously has some decent kickboxing along with it. So she's got good timing. She's got good clinch work. She's got a little bit underrated power, to be honest with you, as well. She's capable of putting fighters down. So Holm is a great, great striker. I just think strike for strike here against Deyrandami. Deyrandami is going to be the more effective striker. She's going to be, I think, the more unorthodox striker, and she's going to be just landing and doing the most damage along the way. I think her defense is a little bit better than Holm as well. So if this stays striker versus striker, again, I understand the initial action. I agree with it. I'm going to pick Deyrandami to beat Holly Holm as well. In my opinion, Holly Holm has to kind of use and implement more of a complete MMA game to win this fight. And she does have it in her. Obviously, she has a great camp backing her and Greg Jackson and crew. And she's more than just a stand-up fighter. I think she's more of the complete MMA fighter against Deyrandami. So if she's able to come up with a good game plan and maybe try to get some takedowns on Deyrandami and implement, you know, steal some close rounds that way, maybe get some top position, or even try to follow the same path that Amanda Nunes did against Deyrandami. I mean, Deyrandami was holding her own. Her takedown defense is very solid, but she eventually got put on her back in that fight, and then Nunes was able to finish that fight. So Holm should try to implement that sort of game plan if she's going to have success against Deyrandami. I just don't think she's going to be able to do that, to be honest with you, or at least not finish the fight there. And this fight probably stays standing more times than not. So if it does, the better striker, the more effective striker again is Deyrandami. So I think she could do enough damage along the way that we could possibly see a stoppage for her to win here as well. But if it goes all five rounds, I think that she's clearly going to win. I mean, a competitive matchup, but Deyrandami is the better striker. She's going to win this fight. So I'm picking her to win.
And I'm actually going to come in here and agree. Holly Holm is a very talented fighter. She is a good striker, an elite striker, great boxing, great kickboxing, and a strong kicking game. But I just think Jermaine Deyrandami is the more dangerous striker of the two. Randami, while Holly Holm was out winning boxing championships, Randami was winning just elite kickboxing and Muay Thai championships. I mean, she is just a ferocious, ferocious kickboxer. One of the best ever in the women's, out of women's, strikers. So I really think that in a fight like this, and where I expect it to stay standing, I think Randami is just going to have the edge. And the biggest thing going for Randami is the fact that, she is an elite, elite, kickboxer, and she has that aggression. Now Holly Holm, she is a bit more of a counter striker, and you saw that where she definitely slows down. If her opponent doesn't take the initiative, Holly's pace slows. She sits back on her haunches a little bit. I mean, it's just not nearly as dangerous as she looked in the Ronda Rousey fight, because Ronda was just all out aggression against her, and Holm was able to get all these pot shot jabs and then circle. I mean, it was almost too easy. And Randami is not going to do that. Randami is too seasoned of a striker. She's going to almost force Holm to engage with her too. And that's actually where Holm gets herself in a little bit of trouble. You saw it in the Shevchenko fight. A really talented striker was able to just outwork Holm a little bit. And then I think here you're going to have a longer, bigger fighter than Shevchenko, and even a more experienced fighter and a more powerful striker. So I think Jermaine Deyrandami is going to be really bringing some heat here against Holly Holm. And I just don't know if Holly's going to be able to withstand it. Nick mentioned that, you know, Holly does come from a great gym and they always have great game plans, but we've not seen any real bit of Holly Holm's ground game ever in the UFC. The only time we've really seen a ground game is when she went for a takedown against Ronda Rousey when she got hurt on the feet. She still looked like a fish out of the water when Miesha Tate took her down. And I just don't think that the ground game is going to be a huge, part of the game plan that she'll be able to effectively use here. So I think Jermaine Deyrandami doesn't just win, but I think she wins impressively. So I'm going to side with Randami. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown of UFC 208. Now, our premium bet for the event will be released this Saturday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this week.